Mr. Gontosh, reel 3.
Right. This couple would walk along with a whip, ask everyone, shouted in high voice, anyone with gold teeth, come forward. Very few did. So, of course, he knew that there are a few who had. He would go around, step over everyone, and at random pick someone out, open his mouth with both hands. And if he's got gold teeth, he had with him another lot, would just tear it out. Not pull the teeth out, but just tear it out. And he would whip you if you defy him. But at the side of it, at the door, there was an assessment with a gun, and that's what made him so strong. That went on for the first day, for the whole day, and they managed to get out a few gold teeth from people. By the time night came, we would have to go to bed. Once it was dark, we were locked in these barracks, and that was it, till morning. And that's how I had to sleep, as I explained before, like the herrings. In the morning, maybe 6 o'clock, we didn't have watches, I don't know the time, but it could be 6 o'clock, maybe half 6, there'd be an appel, what they call an appel. We would have to go outside, line up in fives, each block separate, and they would count. And of course, every day there were less, because people died and they just took him away. They were sending others in.
Sending?
They were sending more in to fill up. So, in other words, the barracks never became empty. There was all the time a new supply. I was there with my brother for about 3 weeks, I think. And there was no work there. We just did nothing during the day. We just walked around and sat around. And then when it got dark, we would go. Yes, the food there consisted of a piece of bread in the morning with black coffee, a soup lunchtime, which, if you found a piece of potato or anything, would be a big deal. And a similar piece of bread at night was another black coffee. That was it. For a few weeks until we were sent, until I was sent to Auschwitz, so the proper camp, this was the Birkenau living. And this number, which I've got now, B7965, that I was given there. The B stands for Birkenau, in fact. When my brother was taken away from me after 2 weeks, actually, to work, which I lost contact, I didn't know what happened to him at that time. Because even from every camp, they were grabbing people out for different... to different camps, different labor camps for work. Because he was older than me, maybe looked a bit better, looked maybe reasonable, healthy to work, he was taken from me. And I was sent to Auschwitz, to number one Auschwitz. And that would be middle of 44. When we got to Auschwitz, the same procedure. Us coming to Birkenau. Showers, change your clothing, given different clothing again, and sent to a block. The blocks were slightly better. We had bunk beds then, in rows of three, you know. And we were allocated work, which was better, at least we did something. I worked in a place called Maurerschule, which is basically what they call a school, because I was young, a school to learn building, Maurer. And we learned later the purpose of it, because there was one German, a high official, who wanted to keep out of the front, to be sent to the front. So he got this job. And perhaps because of that, I'm still here, because I had a reasonable, lucky strike there, because I worked about 3 months, the first 3 months, in the Maurerschule, which was very good. We were treated reasonably well. Our job was to build a wall and knock it down. And this was every day the same. Build and knock it down. Build, knock it down.
So he was deliberately organizing this to keep out of the front.
This is what we heard, yes.
And as long as he had people there, he was safe.
That's right. There must have been quite a few hundred boys. Some of them are still alive now from it.
Was he a vicious chap or kindly chap?
Well, we never met him. We don't know him. We've never seen him, really. We only knew of what he was, that he was the organizer of the Maurerschule. But we were directly, we were under people who were under him. And they were treating us reasonably well. But after 3 months, luck changed, and we were taken out, and new recruits came to this Maurerschule. And we were taken to blocks, and we had to go out to work with others, and we went to the trenches, and we went to pull buildings down that had been bombed or something, various, near Auschwitz, by the camp, We would go out of the camp with guarded by the SS every morning, come back at night again, locked into the camps, and went to bed. The Auschwitz, we had an idea what was happening again, but no one was certain. We could see smoke coming from chimneys, and we didn't even know 100% what this was. But we knew people disappeared all the time. There was a place called Krankhaus, which is a hospital. And everyone used to say, never tell them, Yale, don't go into this Krankhaus, because you'll never come out. Because from there they take you out and you disappear. So, of course, no one volunteered unless he actually couldn't help himself, No one would admit he is ill. He would struggle, he would do anything.
But so even in Auschwitz you didn't know for certain about...
Not at first. But later on, yes, the news came to us that these gas chambers are the ones who gas and burn the people, and the result of it is of the bones and everything, soap is being made, and this soap is being given to us after to use, which we had to have soap to use. And day by day, again, it became a nightmare. But we, just to survive it, to be able to tell the world, we just locked our minds completely to it, because otherwise we would have all collapsed with it. We had to be strong. Those who survived, which is a few of us, had to be strong, without the hope saying that we must survive to tell people, to tell our children. Without that, we would not have survived. Because it was much easier to lie down anyway, not get up when you're walking out to work. Sit down, which a lot of them did. And the SS just shot you. They didn't ask any questions. They didn't try to get you back into the row. When we were walking out, we were walking in rows of five, and someone might have wanted to sit down. We would try and hold them together. Don't. Struggle. Stay, It's only, and this is what we kept saying, it's only another day. Only another week. You'll make it, you'll make it. And as long the hope was there, we did. But those who lost hope, they didn't. And with that, we survived a little longer and longer. We were struggling. We were again starving. The food in Auschwitz was deteriorated, something terrible. The diseases there, the dysentery and typhoid, everything. It was normal thing. You know, we didn't even know. We went to the toilet 10 times a day. We didn't know whether we had dysentery or what it was the matter with us. But we daren't notify anybody. We daren't tell them. We daren't volunteer to go to the Krankenhausen because we knew what's happening. So,
were you getting any news of how the war was going?
Well, we were getting news, but they weren't always the truth. There was a lot of rumors. In 44, which was obviously getting towards the end, we were told that the Russians are approaching, you know, pushing in from the north. And we were told that Auschwitz is going to have to be liquidated soon. This was in autumn 1944, we were told that the Russians are nearing and Auschwitz would have to be liquidated.
Who said that?
The inmates, people in the camps. They might have heard from somebody else and from somebody else and somebody else. There was some truth in it, but not all of it, because we were still there January 45. Until we actually left. We were struggling there until January 1945. And in 1945, it was January, maybe early February, Auschwitz was liquidated because the Russians did approach towards Auschwitz.
And you were there when it was liquidated?
Right? Yes. And we were taken out from Auschwitz. We started off walking from there. They couldn't afford at that time to give us the wagons, you know. We started off walking. We left every day different transport from Auschwitz walking. And we were walking again. We didn't know where we were walking, but it turned out walking towards Austria.
Were you with your brother?
No, my brother was taken, separated from me in Birkenau. I had never seen him since. I did get news from my brother, but not until after the war, from somebody that he was in Gleiwitz, another camp, and he got shot trying to escape. But I had never met him, never seen him. And this report I got from somebody, as a matter of fact, who was with him and survived the camp. He is in Manchester now, a chap called Mendel Beale. Also from the 45 Aid Society. When we left Auschwitz, we left in groups of maybe 1,000 at a time, 1,500, and we would be walking. Again, 5 in a row. It was probably about 30 degrees of frost. At that time, we had very little on. The shoes we had from there, you know, the old dilapidated shoes in the camp, were half open. It was snow all the way through, deep snow. The feet were frozen, but we didn't feel it. We walked for days. During the day we walked, as soon as it got dark, when we got to a farm, they would lock us in the stables. So, because at night the possibility would be for escapes. As soon as it started getting light again in the morning, we were off. But every day, this transport became less and less and less. By the time we reached you know, the railway wagons, where they were going to put us in wagon, there was only about maybe 10% of each transport left. The rest died during the course of the walking. Then we would be put in those wagons again, which were similar wagons to when we left the ghetto. And we went for about 3 or 4 days traveling. We arrived in a place called Melk, that's in Austria, which is another camp, smaller camp. We were settled in there, the same procedure. You go through showers, and straight from the showers you go out to an appeal. And that was in the middle of winter, it was about 30 degrees of frost, straight from the showers. You went outside for them to count you, and all you had on you is a string vest, what they gave us. That's all. No shoes, nothing else. And again, people fell like the flies. Those who survived, eventually they found us accommodation in a barrack. Already with other inmates who have survived to get into there before. All I remember from this particular place, Melk, I went in and immediately when I got into this barrack, I was told the rules by a kapo. You do as you're told. You don't talk back. You don't do this and you do this. Otherwise, you get this. And when he's shown you what you get, he actually hit you with a whip. That was a kapo. And you don't answer back. You just say nothing. There was no work for us there. All day we just walked or sat or lied and died. There was nothing else to do. For weeks, maybe several weeks, maybe a month, I don't know, I was there.
Was that better or worse not to have any work?
Worse. Worse.
Because the time dragged.
The time dragged on, you just wanted to die. You just didn't know which way to die. You know, you just wanted, there was nothing to do. And there's no hope when you don't work as well, when you just sit around. And then every time, every few hours, there'll be an appeal, you know, and they'll start counting you again. And you have to shout your number out. You know, each shouts out the number from Birkenau, which we got. And then comes dark, you're back into your barracks, you go to sleep. And you wake up in the morning and you look who is alive. And your friend or your acquaintance that you've been talking to the day before isn't there. About 4 weeks later, we were taken from there for Melk. Melk was closing down. Every time a camp closed down, they would send us further. They took us to Mauthausen. That was a way of travel. We didn't walk. In fact, if they asked us to walk from there, none of us would have made it. We were already at the last straw. Melk is only a few hours from Mauthausen, the famous camp which everyone has heard of. When we got to Mauthausen, again going through the same procedure with, you know, showers and all this and getting allocated in barracks, and the same procedure from the kapos. And we just got more without hope, you know, we lost hope already. It was a time that you get to a stage that you don't care, that you think there's all this struggle before wasn't even worth it. But there's still that 1% in case there is a chance of to survive, you struggle through. You pretend that tomorrow is going to be the end of it. You're holding on to the last straw, and it is the last straw. In Mauthausen, I did work. My work entailed to work in... they were digging tunnels. Mauthausen is all hills, mountains. They were digging tunnels. And we were the ones who were carrying out the soil. They had big air guns, you know, to dig out the tunnels. And we would shovel the stones and everything onto the little trucks.
What were the air guns?
Air guns, yes. No, those guns which you dig.
Pneumatic drills? Yes,
the drills. And they were done by the stronger people. And we would shovel the grid and everything onto trucks and wheel them away to a stack. That was, for there I worked a few weeks. It was hard work, but it was better than nothing. No matter how hard it was better than nothing. Food was a little better than the milk. They gave us a little bit of salami with the bread in the morning and in the evening, and a better soup during the day. So that gave us a little bit of an injection. And perhaps we started feeling a little better, this Mauthausen. The work itself wasn't so bad. While we were at work, we forgot about it. But once we got back to the camps, and the day we didn't work, which I assume it was Sunday, we didn't know the days, what day it was. We didn't work, it must have been a Sunday. We were there, lounging around, doing nothing. The barracks were not heated. It was freezing. This was getting already spring, but it was still damp, cold, about April. And again, people were dying like the flies. There was no sanitary things there. There was no lavatories. We had to go to big halls, you know, to do our business. The people who died weren't taken care of immediately. They were there for days. They stank away. We passed them every day, you know, walked over them. They just couldn't cope with it. It was so much, you know, happening. They just couldn't cope with it. It was left. They couldn't dig the graves fast enough to even get them in. And we were struggling until Mauthausen was finished. And I think that was about April, or towards the end of April 1945. Then we were marching from there to another place, not a camp anymore, a place called Linz in Austria. And we were walking there for days till we got there. Those who arrived, you know, we at that time considered ourselves to be very lucky that we arrived in this place, because we were told this is the last place. It wasn't a camp, it was a big forest. There were a few barracks, but not many of us could get in. And if we did get in, one actually lay on top of another. That's the only way we could get in. So I found the best place by a tree. I made my place by a tree, because I knew if I went in there, I'll be dead in the morning. I was small. I knew that I'll not survive. We were there for about, I think we went in about 20,000 people into this particular place. And after 3 weeks we were there, the last few days, we were poisoned, because the Germans didn't know what to do with us anymore. They couldn't cope, and they were running. So they gave us poison in the soup, like slow poison, for the last few days. And most of us died there and then. I remember being half conscious one day when I heard the guns very, very near. And it gave me a bit of hope. I thought, right, that could be it, you know. And I was with somebody else at the same, you know, place where we made that place near the tree. And I said, I think this is it. Something's going to happen here, you know. But we didn't know we were poisoned at that time.
How did you discover it?
Well, because we were eventually, when we got liberated by the Bergens, we were immediately rushed to the hospitals, and they had to pump our stomachs. In fact, I was unconscious. The time when I remember the guns, you know, and that's the last thing I remember. After that, I don't remember because I was unconscious until I woke up in a hospital in Wells, which is the place, the nearest place there. And they made a big displaced person camp already. The Americans made it. And we were treated by the Americans. They pumped our stomachs, and they told us that you were very, very lucky. If we would have come a couple of hours later, there would have been no survivors. And the survivors of that camp, of that place, they were, I think, about 800 out of the 20,000. And I've only met one since then who was in Manchester. He's gone to America now. Wasn't the same place as me in the last...
Did the Americans tell you what kind of poison it was?
Yes, they said that it would have been a slow poison and you would have probably obtained it in the soup.
But they didn't tell you the chemical name?
No. Well, if they did, I wouldn't remember it anyway. I don't think it was important to us at that time what type of poison it was. All we wanted to know, are we free? We couldn't believe it. Because in my case, there was, when I regained consciousness, I remember seeing this American uniform. I'd never seen an American uniform before, and I was still under the impression it's the Germans, maybe it was a different uniform. And all I remember is this chap speaking to me in Jewish, in Yiddish, which was a relief. And it turned out to be a Jewish American doctor. And he said, "You're safe." And that's all I remember. And I just couldn't believe it.
How did the Americans treat you?
The Americans treated us fantastic. When he told us that, I thought, I'm dreaming. It is not true. It can't be. But then I'm looking around and I am in hospital. I'm not in this forest. I am in a hospital. So then I've seen other soldiers. You know, it was the same uniform. And I put two and two together and I realized that this is the end. So, of course, we are happy. We all happy. I mean, I'm not well to get up or anything, but I'm happy at least I'm alive. At that particular time, I didn't even think of my parents, of my sister, my brother, anything. At that time, it was all important. The first moment I was alive, I have survived it. And I just wanted to get well, to be able to tell the story. And slowly we recovered. It didn't take long, funnily enough, because they obviously looked after us. Within a few days, we were all reasonably well. We were walking around this camp, this place person camp. We were still not allowed free outside. And there were many reasons for it, because they didn't want us to perhaps mix with the others. A lot of us still had diseases and so on. We were under medical care. But as soon as we became better, we were free, and we could have gone and done what we wanted.